nothing worthwhile, mediocre podcasting, today, tomorrow, forever.
For centuries, the Society of the Black Dragon has sanctioned an ancient rite of combat known as the Kumite, open only to the world's most lethal warriors. It has never been won by a Westerner.
You are not Japanese.
I can do it.
Now, for the first time, the true story of America's super agent Frank Dukes can be revealed.
Uncle Sam can't afford to let you get hurt.
I'm going to Hong Kong.
Frank is going to fight in the Kumite, and we're here to stop him.
An awesome human weapon.
It hurts me just looking at it.
Who infiltrates the Chinese underworld.
I did not come this far to stop now.
Take him.
To enter a forbidden competition.
Couldn't you just get me in?
Strict rules. No press.
You're telling me you never break rules?
Where every fighting style, every worthy opponent, every deadly technique, flash in savage combat.
Time to separate the men from the boys.
And only one will triumph.
Now I break you.
International martial arts sensation Jean-Claude Van Damme in Bloodsport. The true story of the ultimate champion.
Live from the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network Studios, It's Nothing Worthwhile presents Van Damme It, a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. Here's Evan Moody and Andrew Gruthius.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Kumite, Kumite,
Kumite, Kumite, Kumite, Kumite, Kumite, Kumite, Kumite.
We're on Kumite.
No surrender.
Yes, everybody. Live via Zoom. It is our newest podcast venture from Nothing Worthwhile. Evan Moody, Phoenix, Arizona on the West Coast. Braxton Puppy Shango laying on the floor right next to me. Let's bring in my best friend, my partner in crime, Andrew Gruthius, Coral Springs, Florida on the East Coast. Gru Van Damme It. How the hell are you, my friend?
I'm Van Damn Beautiful, pal.
a special Wednesday night taping.
Yes, because we haven't been up for long enough, and it is an hour earlier.
It is actually. It's better for us now.
Yes, I think. No, it feels like it's an hour later.
Well, that's because you lost an hour. But right now, between the East Coast and West Coast, generally speaking, it's a two-hour time difference.
Well, that is true. But I'm still fucking exhausted.
How's everything going?
Everything's great. It's middle of the week at work. Although we're off tomorrow for Veterans Day. Thank you. So are we.
The troops. That's amazing. Thank you.
Looking forward to this for a while. We've been talking about it, and I'm very excited to be doing this finally. And then we're 10 days away from New York, our big New York show.
Yes, Andrew was referring to our annual New York trip. It was canceled last year due to COVID, but we will be back next weekend in our home state of New York City, specifically Merrick, Long Island, New York. Andrew and I will be reuniting in the mutual grounds, the neutral grounds of the Hassenbein home. And we'll talk more about our Nothing Worthwhile Live from New York podcast next weekend. But I am actually excited for Bloodsport. I watched it twice on HBO Max.
Me
Thank
too.
You very much, Andrew Gruthius.
Wait, you can't tell them. You can't. See, now we're in trouble.
Why is that?
You can't. You. I mean, don't. Isn't it like illegal to do that?
Oh,
for me to, like, give you your password or something? You, like, give you my password?
Well, let me ask you a question. On HBO Max, are you allowed to have a certain number of people on one account?
I guess, because I share it with my family.
Yeah, so...
All right, let's change topics here. I don't want to get...
Yeah, let's not get bogged down. We want to thank Ryan Rabalkin and the last...
Give
of
me
Action
that Paramount Plus password back, too.
Yes. No, don't have that. But we want to thank Ryan and the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network for giving us another great opportunity to present ourselves,
absolutely,
hopefully to a larger audience. Enjoy certainly the Facebook Messenger, the insane rants of everyone on Facebook Messenger. But, Gru, we seem to have done a pretty good job on the website. I don't know if you went on the podcast website, but we had certainly a lot more downloads there than we typically have through our general nothing worthwhile desolate audience.
That's too bad. I kind of like the idea of us just talking to each other for no reason and nobody listening. But if people want to listen to this nonsense, I'd say, you know, fine. Just we'll tell you where to send the checks.
There you go. Gru, last month was our pilot episode for Nothing Worthwhile Presents Van Damme It, a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. We tackled 1986 No Retreat, No Surrender. As we said before, today we're going to discuss and break down 1988's Jean-Claude breakthrough, perhaps classic Bloodsport. But Gru, it's time for our new segment. It's Van Damme It, Blood In, Blood Out.
Nothing Worthwhile presents Blood In, Blood Out.
Gru, Blood In, Blood Out is brought to you by New You Life Center. Begin a new you. Check out all of their medical weight loss programs at www.newyoulifecenters.com. That's N-U-Y-O-U, lifecenters.com. Or give them a call at 602-274-0068. You know what you need to tell them. Moody and Gru sent you, and receive a big 15% off your first service. A big Van Damme It thank you to New You Life Center. Gru, in honor of the title Bloodsport, I'm going to ask you trivia questions based on the science of blood.
Oy vey. Science? Really? On this podcast?
Well, yeah, let's have some fun.
Okay.
Let's see what you know about blood.
I Gru? Don't believe in science. I believe in Joe Rogan.
Okay. All right, thank you. Actually, I do believe in Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
so there you
do.
Go. I do love him. Actually, I went to UFC. We watched UFC. I'm actually starting to like UFC. I don't know if this is if WWE is in any imminent danger, but we watched UFC 268. You would love this place in the city of Chandler. It's cold beer and cheeseburgers.
Love
cold
it already.
Beer and cheeseburgers.
Love it already.
Yeah, it was pretty good. All right, Gru, question number one. Which of the following blood cells actually carry the oxygen to your cells? Is it white blood cells, red blood cells, platelets, or neutrophils? Which of the following blood cells actually carry the oxygen to your cells? Is it white blood cells, red blood cells, platelets, or neutrophils?
I'm going to say red blood cells.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
All right, Braxton, lock them in on red blood cells.
I know.
Gru, you are correct. It
really?
Is red blood cells.
Nice.
Yes.
Awesome.
Red blood cells use hemoglobin to carry the oxygen to your cells.
So that
you
would
are
be the
correct,
first
sir.
Science question I've ever gotten right in my life. That's including every class I failed in middle school, high school, and beyond.
Well, let's see if you can get your second science question related. Okay.
Let's go.
Question number two. Which of the following assist in clotting wounds? Is it A, red blood cells? Is it B, platelets? Is it C, white blood cells? Or is it D, neutrophils? Which of the following assist in clotting wounds?
I believe it's D, neutrophils. Final answer.
Is that Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
Braxton, lock him in. Oh, he just peed all over the floor. Okay.
That's a lock-in.
The correct answer, Andrew, is platelets.
Platelets.
Without properly functioning platelets, your blood will not clot. This is a disorder known as hemophilia.
Huh.
Hemophilia. All right, this is going over like a lead balloon.
Hemophilia.
I got beat up in middle school. I said, "You're a hemophilia, dude."
No, just you're saying it. Like,
all right.
It's been a long.
Isn't that
day.
What?
It's been a long.
Isn't
day.
That what they accuse? Isn't that what they accuse Dave Chappelle of? Hemophilia?
Yes, that's exactly what it's all about.
All right. Question all right, number
yeah,
three.
Yeah, well, come on. I can do this. I'm better than this.
All right, let's get serious. Come on. What molecule in the blood carries oxygen?
Shit.
Is it A, chlorophyll? B, hemoglobin? C, factor X? Or D, insulin? What molecule in the blood carries oxygen? A, chlorophyll, B, hemoglobin, C, factor X, D, insulin. Talk us through this one.
Hemoglobin is related to blood sugar, I believe. And that's also related to insulin. But your body needs to produce insulin to do something. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to go with insulin.
Come on. I'd say you have to... all right.
You didn't ask me if I wanted my final answer.
Well, all right, fine. Come on. That's blood sugar is insulin. Get rid of insulin. What molecule in the blood carries oxygen?
All right.
Chlorophyll... Hemoglobin.
Right, so I took the 50-50. I'm taking the 50-50.
Take the 50-50.
Getting rid of hemoglobin and insulin.
Yep.
Okay, so now we've got chlorophyll and factor X. I'll say chlorophyll.
Is it chlorophyll the stuff in plants that makes sugar? That's the food in plants?
I thought chlorophyll was the shit that you use to, like, make... costumes or like, you know, plaster or something. You know, like chloroplast, I guess that's what
we just went from 158 downloads in India to 8. The correct answer, Andrew, is hemoglobin. Iron is used to manufacture hemoglobin, which is why iron deficient people are anemic.
Well,
I don't even
shit.
Know what that means. Yeah. Oh shit. All right, next question. We got two more. What is the most common blood type? Is it A, O positive? Is it B, B positive? Is it C, A negative? This one's a hard one. This is, or D, O negative. What is the most common blood type? O positive, B positive, A negative, O negative.
I think it's either... the most common?
Most common. About 38% of the population has this blood type. O positive, B positive, A negative, O negative.
I think it's type O negative. I think it's type O negative.
All right, is that your final
answer?
I'll
tell you why after you tell me if I'm right or wrong. It's my final answer.
Is that your final answer? All right, Braxton, lock him in on a O negative. Andrew, the correct answer is O positive.
O positive. Oh. I'll tell you why. I was actually, literally yesterday, I was watching something. I forgot what it was, but somebody had, like, there was some action in a hospital. And the movie Heat. I was watching the movie Heat, and it was the scene.
Great movie. Great movie.
And the scene where... he finds Al Pacino finds Natalie Portman in the bathtub, and she's in the hospital and she's lost a lot of blood because she slit her wrists, and I remember the doctor saying I need 2 units of I guess it was O positive. I thought he had said O negative, so I was like, well, I guess if you need blood, you're gonna ask for the most common type. So
what is that great, do you know that great quote from De Niro where he talks about you, like, you have to leave something at the drop of a hat?
Yeah, it's like it. It's like you can't attach yourself. Say, you can't don't attach yourself to anything in your life that you're not prepared to walk out on in 30 seconds flat if you can spot the heat around the corner. Something like that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love
great,
that line.
Great movie. Anyway, all right, last
this is
question.
The science, this is a, I know.
The science
this is
doing,
a hard one.
It's doing what it did to me in high school.
According to a popular idiom, what vegetable is it impossible to squeeze blood from? Is it A, a potato, B, a turnip, C, a cabbage, or D, a rutabaga?
What?
According to a popular idiom, what vegetable, it's a saying, what vegetable is it impossible to squeeze blood from? It's a goofy question. I'm not, believe me.
Say the four again quickly.
A potato, a turnip, a cabbage, or a rutabaga.
I thought the saying was blood from a stone.
That was the stone cold
turnip.
Brett
turnip. Hartnett. Turnip. Final answer. Turnip. Final answer.
A Braxton Lockerman on a turnip. You are correct. You
yes. Finally. Yes.
It's impossible to squeeze
Thank
blood
you.
From a turnip.
Thank
and
you.
And it's impossible to squeeze blood from this segment. That was everyone. Blood in, blood out. All right. All right, Andrew, we have just... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say sorry, Ryan, but we'll do better.
I had such high hopes for the material for this episode. Andrew,
look,
we
science
have...
Science is now doing to me what it did to me in high school. Makes me want to run out of the room and smoke a cigarette. That was my high school experience in science class.
Please, we don't. Please, no vices here. It was all for fun. Grew, we have even more for our listeners. It's time for our latest Jean-Claude Van Damme updates. It's Van Damme It News.
Get your latest Jean-Claude Van Damme update. It's Van Damme It News.
Today's Van Damme News is brought to you by New Life Center. The journey is everything. Phoenix Entrepreneur Magazine named them in the top 15 med spas to watch in 2021. Check out all of their medical aesthetics and cosmetic injectables at www.nuulifecenters.com. That's N-U-Y-O-U lifecenters.com. Or give them a call. You know the number, 602-274-0068. Tell them that Moody and Grew sent you and receive a big 15% off your first service. Thank you, New You Life Center. Grew, it was a happy 61st birthday to the Muscles from Brussels, Jean-Claude Van Damme, as Jean-Claude celebrated his 61st birthday.
Wait, he's from
on
Brussels?
Yeah, Jean-Claude, you knew that.
I just watched Bloodsport. He plays Frank Dukes from Vegas.
Well, that's what we call a little creative license. Oh, and he's so American in that movie, by the way. He's like,
I know.
It all.
I know. That's why I was confused. Well, I'm sorry.
Well,
I just had
it was
to do
it. It was JCVD's birthday, his 61st birthday last. Well, we're going back a little bit. Monday, October 25th, 61. He even got a shout out from fellow action star Chuck Norris. Gru, Belgian actor, martial artist Jean-Claude Van Damme is known for his roles in the popular 1980s and 1990s action films Cyborg, Kickboxer, Lionheart, Death Warrant, Double Impact, Universal Soldier, Street Fighter, Sudden Death, among others. And he celebrated his 61st birthday in a white terry cloth robe in Paris, France. And he posted this video on Instagram. Please refer to your screen right now. Here's Jean-Claude, 61st
Well, they
birthday.
Can't see it, but I can see it.
Oh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh. What are those little watermelons on the thing?
Looks like strawberries.
Strawberries.
And... Ooh.
That's how fires start. You just toss the lit match.
Today's my birthday, and I would like to enjoy that with everybody around the world. My name is JCVD for Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I'm wishing happy birthday to everybody on 18th of October around the world. I love you guys, and thank you for all those years of support. Without you, I would not be Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah.
So what do you think? That's kind of a nice touch. What do you?
Who would he be? Mike Davis from Omaha? Well, I mean, who would he be? No, that was very nice. Yeah, 61. The only reason I would think he'd be older is because to me he's been around forever. But
well, he has been around forever.
Yeah, no, but it seems like he's like sort of not quite. I guess he is the generation. The movie generation of like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and those guys, but not age wise though. Like they're good. What they got a good like 15, almost 20 years on them, don't they?
I mean, you're putting Jean-Claude. I mean, this is. Well, sure, it's a Jean-Claude podcast. Do you put Jean-Claude on the same level as Stallone and Schwarzenegger? Because I put him a notch below.
A notch below.
In all respect.
Yeah. A notch below, but. Still part of the same sort of Expendables. Let's call him the Expendables tribe. You know, like he's part of the Expendables, and that's he's one of the novelty names that they bring in, who are usually the older guys, like Chuck Norris and Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, all those guys. I'm not talking about like Terry Crews and them, but yeah, that's very nice. He's sharing it with the world. He must be very lonely. I'm sorry.
But first of all, Terry Crews, I don't include Terry Crews on any list.
No, I meant the because he was in the Expendables. I don't put him in that category. I put him in the.
You mentioned Chuck Norris.
Yes.
We know that Jean-Claude worked as a bouncer at a bar owned by Chuck Norris, and Jean-Claude also worked with the stunt team on Norris's 1984 film, I didn't know this, Missing in Action. So when Van Damme posted that video that we just watched online, Chuck Norris, who is now 81 years old, posted a happy birthday, my friend, and on Instagram. And then when a fan responded and asked Chuck if he could still hit the boxing bag, Chuck responded, I gave it a shot, and this is the result. It's been a while, but it felt great. Andrew, refer to your screen. Here's an 81-year-old Chuck Norris hitting the heavy bag. That's not bad, huh?
I think that's a very... That's a beautifully put-together toupee.
I was just going to say, his hairline...
You meant the punching. That's very good for an
81-year-old. No... His punching is pretty good, but his hairline is very suspicious.
Yeah, but
81-year-old.
But what do you expect? But that's pretty cool. Why don't we hear from him anymore? Like, is he like
Chuck?
Retired?
Well, he's 81 years old. I mean, what are you expecting? I mean,
that, he could throw a couple of fake grenades, or, you know, like what he used to do. Like, where's Brad?
I feel like the last thing legitimately I saw Chuck do was he was on the infomercial for like that Total Body Gym with Christie Brinkley. It's All right, that's what I'm saying.
The last movie besides The Expendables was like that. I remember talking about it last week or last time. Sidekicks.
How many years ago was that?
That was like. Early 90s, so 25 years ago, more than that. Wow. All right, this is depressing me.
That's the last sort of big movie that Chuck did, according to your memory.
Well, then he did Walker Texas Ranger forever. So,
oh wow.
And that's it for Entertainment Tonight. This shit sucks. Crew, let's get to it. Today's Van Damme podcast, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bloodsport, is brought to you by New You. Fuck it. All right, just let's get to the damn movie. We've had more stop starts than Van Halen.
Marie, I had nothing to do with that botched advertisement.
Got me a date with a supermodel. Okay. Bloodsport Grew is a 1988 American martial arts action film directed by Newt Arnold. I love at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. He goes, it's a Newt Arnold film. Newt, wow.
A Newt Arnold picture.
Yeah. It stars Jean-Claude Van Damme, Donald Gibb, Leia Ayers,
Ogre himself, although as I like to call him, Dr. Death. What's that from?
Ooh, Dr.
Death. You remember him? Remember him as Dr. Death? Oh, come on. Come on.
Jesus, I'm...
Sports.
First and 10?
Yes, there you go. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Da-na-da-na. Da-na-da-na.
Crew, this film is partly based on unverified claims made by martial artist Frank Dux. Bloodsport is generally thought, Crew, to be Jean-Claude Van Damme's first starring film.
All right, if this is a true story, I weigh 175, all right?
All right, well, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. All right, let's get back on track here. It's the first film in the Bloodsport franchise, which we will not break down in today's podcast. We will go to the original Bloodsport group. There's not a lot of backstory on the production side of Bloodsport. We do know that credited co-writer Sheldon Lettich came up with the idea from the film. Now, you asked about Frank Dux. Mm-hmm. Quote from Sheldon, I had known Frank Dux for a number of months. Frank Dux, a number of months before I came up with the idea of Bloodsport. Frank told me a lot of tall tales, most of which turned out to be bullshit. Well, his stories about participating in the so-called Kumite event sounded like a great idea for a movie. There was one guy who he introduced me to named Richard Bender. That's Dick Bender.
Hey!
Who claimed to have actually been at the Kumite event. Grew, didn't we go to Kumite in 2011? We had row F seats 11 and 12.
Of course we did. We paid $700 a piece for that.
So Frank swore, you know, everything about Kumite was true. A few years later, this guy, meaning Richard Dick Bender, had a falling out with Frank and confessed to me that everything he told me about Kumite was a lie, that Frank coached him in what to say. So I was thinking about this. You know, Gru, when you see in these movies based on true events,
yeah,
you've had your toe in the Hollywood pool. How true are Hollywood productions when, you know, I know it may be a dumb question, but when it says based on true events, movies like The Strangers, all this based on true events, just how true are true events in Hollywood?
I would say an average of 35 to 40% true. There are some that really stick to the narrative, but there are those that just take the framework of the story and go their own way with it. I think Goodfellas is an example of that. They saw an interesting little tidbit in a speck of the mafia and said, let's examine this and put a micro a lens on this. So I don't think inspired based on a true story, inspired by true events. I'd say average 40 to 45% of it is true.
Okay, that sounds like a good number. Group producer Mark DeSalle said he was looking
for
that
doesn't
a
mean, but that doesn't mean that this one.
Oh, my God. Do you not hear me move on? Why would he do that to me? I feel like we're back to the first podcast.
That doesn't mean that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go
Bloodsport,
ahead.
Bloodsport, I'd say, is about negative 4% true. There's no way. There's no fucking way. All right, but keep going.
I can't wait to talk about this in a little more detail.
Keep going.
Producer Mark DeSalle said he was looking for a, quote, new martial arts star who was a ladies' man who appeals both to men and women. And that's Van Damme. Gru, Van Damme is bi appealing.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you. I mean, look, I'm not into dudes, but he's a handsome guy. And he is ripped. I mean, I didn't realize, we've been watching him all these years, and I haven't seen this movie in a while. Dude, What I could have done if I had that kind of physique with my life, I felt really, really, I mean, I already feel really, really, you know, depressed. But
like insecure. Like, yeah, insecure.
When I saw that, I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm ever leaving the house again.
Let me ask you a question. I just thought of this question. Do you think Van Damme was on something performance enhancing for the filming? Because he is pretty ripped here. He's a young dude. He's probably in his early 30s here. Remember, he's a little older than we think because he did No Retreat, No Surrender at 28. So he's probably maybe 29, 30 here.
He's if he's on anything, he's probably on whatever the stuff was that was legal at the time that isn't now. But I'd believe him if he said he wasn't on anything because it does look pretty natural. You know, he's not like he doesn't have a 24 pack. It's more bulk than it's more. You know, he's just in incredible shape. And how much longer are we going to keep talking about his
body? I don't know. Jean Claude.
I would say he's pretty. He probably was on, you know, some harmless supplements that helped his body recover from work.
Well, they do play up. I mean, the movie does play up somewhat, you know, his sex appeal. I mean, he's...
That's true.
The scene where he's at the hotel with Leia Ayers and he walks in his underwear. Marie, like, walked by and she was like, oh, my God, like, Jean-Claude's in his underwear.
Well,
I, of course, was sucking my thumb intently right in front of the screen. I was like...
Oh. I mean, I, you know, wore out the knob on the remote on that one. I was going back and forth in there, you know. Leia Ayers, I actually recognized her from somewhere, but we're going to talk about her.
Hold your thoughts on Miss Ayers. We'll talk about her in a little bit.
Okay.
Actually, you know, tomorrow I have off for Veterans Day. I think, you know what I'm going to do, talking about all the sex appeal? I'm going to go to my cable. I'm going to hit numbers 3 and 5 on the box and jiggle the little tuner and see if I can get Playboy Channel illegally.
Remember you had to have one kid stand on the roof and like point the thing in the right direction and the other guy. Oh, God. It reminds me of backless couches.
Well, Andrew mentioned Leia Ayers, so let's take a look at the... Actually, a look-see at the very underrated cast of Bloodsport. I was really very much pleasantly surprised when I took a look at the cast. Obviously, we have Jean-Claude Van Damme as Frank Dukes. And let's talk about, Gru mentioned him a little bit, Donald Gibb as Ray Jackson. Gru, best known for his roles as the hulking, dim-witted fraternity brother Ogre in several installments of the Revenge of the Nerds film series.
Ogre.
He's Kumite fighter Ray Jackson, of course, in Bloodsport. And as Leslie Dr. Death Crunchner on the amazingly underrated HBO sitcom First and Ten. Gru, I wrote in my notes, Donald Gibb, the lovable 80s quintessential meathead. Gru, give us some thoughts overall on Donald Gibb. He had a nice run in Hollywood.
He's still alive.
I believe he is. I did look at his IMDb.
He's great. He was great. I mean... He was in Revenge of the Nerds as Ogre. He was in First and Ten. He was in, okay, I mean, he was, he was in, you know, one of those like late night softcore or whatever. It was called Stewardess School. That's what it was called. It's about a bunch of dimwits pilots who like crash a jet and then have to go to learn how to be stewardesses.
I'm getting a little sweaty. Hold on, I think
he was in that one. But for me, he's always Dr. Death. He was in an episode of Cheers, I remember. But yeah, very, very recognizable. I mean, look, Revenge of the Nerds is a huge hit.
Would you say he kind of had a little bit, for a little while, the market on the lovable meathead, the lovable... lunkhead sort of deal?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he wasn't... I don't know. I can only seem to think of three things I've seen him in, even though I feel like I know the guy. Like we said, Revenge of the Nerds was known all over the world, and he was in a whole bunch of those sequels that I didn't see, but some people saw. So you know, he had a mini run, which was nice.
So in the second Revenge of the Nerds, there's a great scene where it's a long camera shot and two of the characters are talking, and Ogre had just finished a beer binge, and they show him at a urinal, and he's just at the urinal for like 5 minutes, and you could just see him in the background, but he's peeing forever, and it's
right.
A really funny shot. Right, of course, that.
No, I've never seen it. I've never seen it. I
and of course, that delivers a zero response from Andrew. But thank
no,
you.
No, no, I've never seen it. Is it worth watching? Is that movie worth watching?
I would say the second one was okay, and then you know, okay. Tails off.
That's
after
the one
that.
With Courtney Thorne Smith, right?
Mm. Oh yeah, she was.
I love her.
Gru, you mentioned Leia Ayers as Janice Kent. Obviously, she was also, Leia Ayers was also Valerie Bryson on the daytime serial The Edge of the Night. In 1984.
Wait. Because I don't know where you're going with this, but I remember her from a movie that.
Go ahead.
I still to this day believe I'm the only one who in the entire world who has seen this movie. And I remember renting it. I remember renting it from Blockbuster Video, and I have mm-hmm. it. I own it streaming now. It is a movie called Eddie Macon's Run, starring John Schneider and Kirk Douglas, from like 1983 or 2 or 4 or whatever. Nobody I've ever met in my life has ever seen this movie or even heard of it. But she was in that movie. She played John Schneider's wife. That's where I remember her. Eddie Macon's Run. Do you have that there?
No, I have Damn. The following. I didn't take everything. She in 1984 starred in Velvet, which was an ABC Aaron Spelling television movie. She co-starred as Linda Bowman in the abbreviated third season of ABC's 9 to 5, the television adaptation. She also played Jill Schrader on the HBO original comedy First and 10 with Bloodsport alumni Donald Gibb Ooh. In 1986-1987. This caught my eye. In 1990, she replaced Maureen McCormick for the role of Marcia Brady on the short-lived series The Bradys. She also made guest appearances on television series Hotel, Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Married with Children, and Who's the Boss. In 1995, she had a recurring role as Tara Flynn on 3 episodes of the Chuck Norris-helmed Walker, Texas Ranger. Nice presence, Leia Ayers. She plays the very pretty, somewhat damsel in distress here quite well. Gru, any thoughts on Leia Ayers?
She was beautiful. And I can see why Frank Dukes fell in love with her within, you know, 4 seconds, because they were practically married by the time the the morning came, and then that ass shot with the Speedos. But she was it was an interesting character. She was a player. She was trying to get into the what's it called again?
Kumite.
So she screwed him. He didn't help her. Then she went and started screwing that other guy, who took her in. And she played it off nicely. She was good. I'm surprised she didn't have more of a career. Very, very,
yes, Andrew.
Very beautiful.
Yes, Andrew.
But yes, that, is that what it was? Yeah, that.
Yeah. The fist thing. Norman Burton as CID agent Helmer. I'm not going to give you everything on Norman Burton. He actually played the hunt leader, the gorilla in the science fiction film Planet of the Apes. Norman Burton played Felix Leitner in the James Bond film Diamonds Are Forever in 1971. He played Will Giddings, the ill-fated engineer in the action film The Towering Inferno. I remember that as a kid in 1974. He was also in Gumball Rally, 1976, Crimes of Passion, 1984, Deep Space, 1988. He also played Interagency Defense Command Supervisor Joe Atkinson in the second season of Wonder Woman with Linda Carter. And he might have most famously known as Bert Dennis in the situation comedy The Ted Knight Show, and also played Dr. Green, Natalie's father, in the television series The Facts of Life.
That's where I remember him from, The Facts of Life.
Did I just say that out loud on the air? Oh, God, he doesn't give me... Any thoughts on Norman Burt, Agent Helmer from Bloodsport?
I mean, yeah, he was... This is where, like I said, the only place I've ever seen him before is The Facts of Life. But he was kind of funny in this. Him and Forrest Whitaker. I know you'll go over Forrest Whitaker, but they had fun with these nonsense roles that they whatever they are. They were pretty good. They were pretty good, and I have to say, they must have broken some kind of record for like the best time filler in a movie. Ever.
Can I guess
yeah,
what you're gonna say?
Go. Yeah.
Is it that ridiculous chase scene?
Yep. That like 2-year-old little chase scene where he's running from them constantly, and it just literally it's there just to kill time. But the reason that it's so great is because it's still fun to watch. And it doesn't it's got nothing to do with the plot. There's no reason for it to exist, and yet it's good for a laugh, and the music is fun. Like, so that's why to me it's like the greatest time filler ever.
It felt like almost a chase scene from Family Guy, where it's like all of a sudden the person getting chased is chasing. It's just like all over the place with little comedic elements. Yeah, I agree. I was like, why is this even in here? It's funny how I recognize that.
There's no way that was in the original script. I would be shocked if that was in the original script.
Gru, Forrest Whitaker is CID Agent Rollins. Gru, he's definitely the most accomplished of the bunch. Forrest Whitaker, Gru, has won an Academy Award, a Golden Globe Award, a British Academy Film Award, and 2 Screen Actors Guild Award. Gru, real quick, Forrest Whitaker made his film debut in 1982, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, listen to some of the films he has worked in. Good Morning Vietnam, The Crying Game, Platoon, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, The Great Debaters, Arrival, Respect. He's also appeared in such big-time blockbuster films such as Panic Room, which I really super liked, with Jodie Foster, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and Black Panther. For his portrayal of Ugandan dictator Idi Amin in the British historical film drama The Last King of Scotland, 2006, he won an Academy Award for Best Actor. He's directed television. He's directed movies, 1985's Waiting to Exhale, 1998's Hope Floats, and 2004's First Daughter. Forrest Whitaker, grew pretty stellar resume. Any thoughts on Mr. Whitaker?
Yes. Forrest Whitaker, he's a guy who will... he's one of those actors who will never, ever not be able to get a job somewhere working as an actor. Like, because he's been in, like, Academy Award winning movies like Good Morning Vietnam and The Last King of Scotland, which he won for. But he'll also do piece of shit movies when he needs to. Like, he's like you just mentioned, like 1/10 of his filmography, I'm sure.
Right.
And I actually did a movie. I worked on a movie with him, and he's such a nice, down to earth guy. People love working with him. It makes things very easy on a set, very personable. And he just has, I think he has a certain level of respect in the industry, where he will always be someone, you know, you say, we got Forrest Whitaker, it'll be like, you know, we're in good shape. He's a fantastic actor. I think so.
Let me follow up on what you said. You just talked about Forrest Whitaker as a nice guy. I'm curious, as an outsider on a film set, he's certainly an A-level actor. What are the kind of things he says or does where you go, wow, this guy's a nice guy? He hasn't let the fame go to his head too much.
He shows up at a hotel room party that one of the crew is having, for just says to a bunch of people, hey, anybody want to come hang out? Come to this room tonight. We're going to have food. We're going to have beer, whatever. And he just comes and hangs out with everybody. and he talks to everybody. He's one of the guys does not need the camera or the attention on him at all times. Justin, I remember, you know, I sat with him for like 2 minutes, just having a beer and just bullshitting. Just he's one of the he fits in very well, and I mean that's I think that's an interesting quality for somebody of that of I mean he's pretty big stature, you know he's very down to earth and
all right,
cool guy.
Here's my last question before we move on. I don't want any explanation. What percentage of fairly big Hollywood actors would you consider nice in that same realm of Forrest Whitaker? You've been on a couple of sets. What percentage did you say out of 100 would you say were pretty decent, self-effacing, nice folks?
I want to say 50 to 60%.
50 or 15?
50. 50. 50.
50. Okay,
yeah,
good.
50 to 60%.
Groove, finally, I want to talk about Bolo Young. He started as a competitive bodybuilder. He's certainly big here. Martial artist and a martial arts film actor. He's usually cast as the villain in the movies in which he stars. He's best known for his performances as Bolo in Enter the Dragon, starring Bruce Lee. Of course, Chong Li in Bloodsport and Chang Li in Bloodfight. He's made numerous appearances. He's had numerous appearances in a long career and definitely in these Hong Kong martial art films. I've always seemed to think of Bolo Young, like if I thought about Donald Gibb, I think of Bolo Young as the quintessential Asian martial arts villain. Gru, any thoughts on Bolo Young?
Are you telling me before this movie you knew who Bolo Young was?
I did know Bolo Young.
I did not.
Do I know him? Do I know him? Do I know his filmography? No, but do I know Bolo Young? As that big, thick, badass Asian actor? Hell
to me,
yeah.
He looked... I didn't try to, but I wouldn't be able to place him. And the name did not ring a bell. Is he in something... Is he in anything bigger than this? Bigger than Bloodsport that you could think of? That I would know?
Oh, fucking put me on the spot right now.
It's a science question.
Hit pause. I'll go to... No, I would say I don't know.
What do you mean? We're live.
I feel like I've seen Bolo in a lot of like sort of martial arts movies, and he's always the bad guy. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just like when I felt when you say Donald Gibb, I think of 80s thick, lovable lunkhead, lovable bully, lovable big,
yeah,
broad, you know, country western kind of guy. Bolo, yeah, Young, I think of like the quintessential 80s villain, and I want to talk about him a little bit more in depth of Chong Li. So any other thoughts on Bolo? Otherwise, I'm
going to
move on.
Since you're going to talk about Chong Li, I'll save it for that because it's got to do with like the dubbing and everything.
Gru, let's go to the plot for Bloodsport. We get an opening montage of diverse fighters from all over the world. Of course, it's a Newt Arnold film. And Gru, U.S. Army Captain Frank Dux has trained in the way of ninjutsu under his sensei, Senzo Tanaka. Gru, we go back in a flashback and we see Dukes and a group of his friends break into Tanaka's home to steal a katana, which is an ancient Japanese sword. Dukes is apprehended, but he decides to return the katana to its place. Impressed by Frank Dukes' integrity and toughness, Senzo decides to train him alongside his son, Shingo. We see that Shingo eventually dies. And Senzo trains Dukes as a member of the Tanaka clan. Dukes is invited to the Kumite, an illegal martial arts tournament in Hong Kong. After his army superiors refuse to let him go, Dukes goes absent without leave, says goodbye to his sensei, and leaves for Hong Kong. Of course, we have two criminal investigative command agents, Helmner and Rawlins, are assigned to track down and arrest Dukes. Gru, that gives us the opening sort of... opening quarter of the movie. The army guy goes into the showers and sees the showers running, and out goes Jean-Claude. Any thoughts on the opening setup of the film?
Well, it was interesting because I got a little confused because after he escapes, he stops and then he's reminiscing about when he was a kid. But
right,
the flashback never really ends. it never really comes back to that point where he's just standing there thinking. Unless I missed something. Did you get that?
Are you actually like detailing a plot hole?
It's not so much a plot hole. It's just like somebody forgot that the whole movie was a flashback. I was
well,
like,
it's almost, I just feel then,
go ahead.
I feel like I said that about No Retreat, No Surrender, and you went, the whole movie's a plot hole, Moody. What the hell? You
know? Yes. But I'm just trying to remember because he's standing there thinking about when he was younger, and the boy who played the young Van Damme definitely
it was terrible, definitely terrible,
knocked it out of the park. Right.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Well, you can't blame him because number one, his voice was dubbed by I think the guy who did the voice for Oscar the Grouch or something, and plus. I mean, this is who they're casting. Are they trying to show us that Van Damme was once a scrawny, geeky Howard Stern looking kid, who's just completely awkward? But the interesting part is Van Damme is reminiscing about all this. Then later on, after all, everything goes to hell. He's flashing back to stuff that we already saw, so now it's a flashback within a flashback. And I was sitting there like, where's Doc Brown in like the space-time continuum here? Like, something's going to get fucked up. Did I miss something?
Well, you know what I thought? When I saw a flashback in a flashback, I thought, we're in a flashback, in a montage. We're flashing back, flashing forward, flashing back.
Speaking of montage, the sound, I need the soundtrack to this movie. I need the soundtrack to Bloodsport. It's got to be out there somewhere.
I'll talk about that in a little bit because okay, it's a good point. But after arriving in Hong Kong, clearly he took a Delta Flight 461. He was in aisle 14C. So Frank Dukes just ends up in Hong Kong, and he befriends American fighter Ray Jackson and their guide Victor Lin. When they arrive,
and the 3 seconds later, hey Frankie, you and me, Frankie. Remember the Looney Tunes, the big dog and the little dog. Hey Spike, how are you, Spike? Come on, Spike, let's go, Spike. Like that. That's what these two reminded me of. After 2 minutes together, they're in love.
Yeah. Fenced it. Don't forget the gravy. The officials are skeptical, but they accept him after Dukes provides his connection to the Tanaka clan by performing Gru the Dim Mach Death Touch. Yeah. Gru the Dim Mach Death Touch is like, I don't know, it looks like a Vulcan nerve pinch if you ask me. It's a martial arts technique reputed to kill using seemingly less than lethal force targeting a specific area of the body. Gru, on the first day of the tournament, Dukes earns the enmity of the ruthless Kumite champion Chong Li after breaking his record for the fastest knockout. Gru, those early fight sequences are pretty well done. Plus, you got the music, Fight for Your Life, Kumite, mm-hmm. Kumite, Kumite. Gru, this takes us, you know, the next leg of the movie. They set us up in Kumite. Ray Jackson, we got friendship. How do you feel the movie's progressing here?
It's progressing exactly as it's supposed to. I mean, this is, you know, this is plot-wise, this is a, you know, paint-by-numbers, you know, guy comes to underground fight club and the bad guy's not really a bad guy, he's just a bad guy. You know, he's not really much of an antagonist, but it's basically about one man's journey to find himself in the art of blood sport. But it's
what the movie's trying to sell you on.
Yeah, but
that is what they're trying to sell you on.
Exactly. But you know what? I was still all in. It was fun. I was enjoying it. I mean, I was enjoying how I hate to say it because I think this theme is going to be recurring. I was enjoying how bad it was. You know?
Oh boy.
Like
hold your
Okay.
Go ahead.
I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, we were talking about the dubbing. Like, the guy, there's a guy in the beginning, near the beginning. I forgot who it was, but the dubbing was so bad, but it seemed like they were doing it on purpose. and the same with Young Van Damme and a bunch of the other, like, it seemed like they were trying to almost satirize some of those old Chop Saki movies. And it was distracting in a good way. It was unintentional laughter, but laughter is still laughter, and laughter is entertainment. So, and but plot-wise, it's moving at lightning speed. It's going right along. We're jumping right into the action. They waste no time, except for that little Pee-wee's Playhouse chase scene that they had. But other than that, yeah, it's moving.
I never felt that the movie was trying to parody anything. I mean, they take themselves pretty seriously here.
Yeah, and I respect that, and I like that.
Okay. Dukes, here we meet American journalist Janice Kent. She's investigating the Kumite. Initially, Dukes refuses to help her, but she sneaks into the arena by agreeing to date with another spectator. And, of course, Gru, I will actually give you my first real massive complaint with the movie, as we see the different fighters from all over the world fight, and, of course, they fall into the very broad stereotypes. Of course, the Asian fighters are very technically sound martial artists. Ray Jackson, the American, of course, is the big, you know, strong, not very technically savvy, but he's just going to beat the crap out of you. And of course, Andrew, then there's the black African fighters.
Oh God!
Who literally roll on the floor and literally make monkey-like movements as they're fighting. And Listen, I am no prude, but boy, I was like, wow, this is not aged well. No, I mean, this is a pretty low-hanging fruit stuff.
You know what? It's interesting how, and I'm not saying that it's right or wrong, I'm just saying it's interesting how they make a big deal. HBO Max did this for Gone with the Wind. Do you remember when, you know, they put Gone with the Wind on their service, and there were a lot of complaints because it's about the, you know, the reconstruct or the Civil War South. I don't know if it's Civil War or Reconstruction. I haven't seen it in forever, but for the stereotypical views of African Americans, and they took it down and then they put it back up with like a 5-minute video disclaimer about [S2] Wow. [S1] The racial stereotypes and how they were wrong then and they're wrong now, but this was made in 1939, and they did like this big explanation for what they were about to see, and then they aired it, and then they aired it uncut and everything. But here we're watching stuff that's almost intentionally, it's fiction, and it's portraying those stereotypes in that way, and not a peep. So I just find it interesting how, you know, so many movies fly under the radar, where, you know, you get a high profile one, and that's the one that gets the disclaimer. You know? Do you know what I mean? You didn't know that about Gone with the Wind.
I did. I think we referenced it on an earlier podcast. I'm not for any disclaimers on anything. Either you show the movie, you show the art,
yeah,
and you allow the viewer to make the judgment for themselves. You want to put something on your website, I have no problem. But to put something on in conjunction with the movie is completely wrong. Of course, I'm saying here, Andrew, I don't believe it's anything mean-spirited.
Of course it's not.
I just think, let me finish. I just think it's a sign of the times. And, you know, I think they're trying to show the diversity of the fighters in Kumite. But it's a bad look. It's a stereotypical, it's a broad look. I don't think I'm not going to look into it any further, but I watched this and I was like, is this guy really trolling on the floor, waving his arms? Yeah. It's not a good look in 2021,
and then he gets his ass kicked by an Asian. but
that's okay. I think
that's fine. Yeah, but if you're talking about stereotype, the title of this movie should be Stereotype. I mean, what do you mean? I mean, look at every kind of. All right, you got the big lovable, you know, the Donald Gibb character. You got the, you know, the damsel in distress. They got the blonde girl, who of course they're going to fall in love.
I've already laid all that out. So what's your point? What are you saying now? No, roads are racist?
My point? No, I'm saying it's this movie covers especially Asians. Every single stereotype that exists is in this movie. So,
well, I would say that action movies, Asian action movies, that there's some low-hanging fruit there. I don't think it was done in any kind of mean-spiritedness, but it's there. I just wanted to point it out. I was just like, wow, are they really going there with this movie? And they did. And again, I think it's a sign of the times. I don't think it's a reflection on anything personal or some kind of philosophy, but it's pretty wild to see, you know, the African fighters, you know, on all fours, you know, swinging around, fighting in a very animalistic, you know, monkey primate kind of way. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and to see it then, you wouldn't think twice about it, but watching it now, you cringe a little bit.
Yes, you do. All right, Gorilla, let's move on. On the second day, Ray Jackson is matched up against Chong Li. Ray Jackson has a moment. He hurts Chong Li, but he wastes time gloating, allows Chong Li to recover, and Chong Li, of course, viciously beats him down. And I think he, like, stomps, gives him almost like a curb stomp right to the mat, knocks him out. Dukes visits Jackson at the hospital and vows to avenge him. After witnessing the brutality of the Kumite tournament, Janice Kent argues with Dukes and tries to convince him not to return. Of course, that's where he goes on his long, inspirational speech telling her, I'm trying to be the best Frank Dukes that I could be. Helmer and Rawls Grew arrive in Hong Kong, and they contact local police inspector Chen. They begin asking around for Dukes. They track him down to his hotel. Then, of course, I reference in my notes that crazy chase scene that Andy's already referenced. I've seen better chase sequences on Family Guy. And of course, Dukes arrives at the Kumite. Helmer and Rollins are waiting for them, along with Chen and four of his officers. In a pretty funny scene, he like knocks out all the officers and tasers them, and basically says, I'll go with you at the conclusion of the tournament.
Yeah.
So we're setting up.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're setting up the big final fight scene. Gru, we're going to see Dukes against Chong Li. Any final thoughts as we head into the main event?
Yeah, very surprising that we're going to see Dukes against Chong Li. I was not prepared for that. I really thought they'd go the other way and they'd give us Dukes versus Jackson, or maybe even let the girl get in the ring, you know, something. But but they went the other way. They threw me a curve. So this is the ending we all came to see, and we're going to get to see Van Damme beat up the bad guy. And we're looking forward to it. And he's going to take some hits himself.
Well, we see prior to amp up the crowd, Chong Li had killed one of his opponents.
Yes.
And he conceals a salt pill in his waistband for the final match with Dukes.
All of a sudden, he's Dukes Mr. Fuji. Is that
Dukes
now? Game. For those of you who think that might be racist, it's not. Mr. Fuji was a manager in the WWE who used to.
What is this, Gone with the Wind? You don't have to explain yourself, everybody.
But I.
Please.
Anyway.
Oh my lord.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, AOC. Let's go on with the podcast. Li blinds him by crushing the salt pill, throws it into Duke's face. And it's just a great scene where Van Damme's character flashes back to those early training sequences with Senzo and how he was blindfolded. And, of course, he overcomes being blinded and defeats Chong Li. The next day, he bids farewell to Kent and Jackson before returning to the United States with Helmer and Rollins. Gru, Bloodsport. Yeah.
Why would you do that to me?
I don't know.
Bloodsport tries to be nothing more than it is. It knows what it is, and it It doesn't try to be anything more.
I will say this. I'd like to interject.
Go ahead.
I thought Bolo Young was actually fucking great in this movie and was a highlight for me.
What?
Because he does play. Can I finish my point? Don't interrupt
me.
I thought he played the classic heel perfectly here. It is way over the top, but he confronts the crowd. He waves to the crowd. He feeds off their anger. He's got the salt pill. You could see along the way during the Kumite, he like breaks the guy's leg at first. You could see he's amping up more and more until he literally kills an opponent in the ring. It's way over the top. But here, I thought Bolo Young was actually really, really good in this movie.
I mean, he wasn't really acting because it wasn't his voice.
Well, why would you say that, though? So, I mean,
because it's just
you're such an acting snob. Unbelievable.
He's a presence. And yeah, he did a terrific job.
Sorry.
But you know, he's not playing Death of a Salesman.
I didn't say that. I don't want you to say he did a good job if you don't feel he did a good job. I thought
he did a good job
an action hero villain, a martial arts villain. I thought he did a great job here. Yes.
I would have liked to have seen. I wasn't sold on the personal vendetta. Probably because I wasn't sold on the friendship to begin with, because it was just thrown together. So, I would have liked a little more of that.
I'll give you that the movie feels like a WWE storyline. It's very rushed.
Yeah.
It's very quick. And I'll talk about when I give my final review. I think that leads into one of my criticisms of the movie. But
okay.
If you know Bolo Young, I thought was no, he's not. It's not Shakespeare. But I thought for the role, he actually did a very, very good job. Gru, what was the box office for one Bloodsport? There was not a lot on Bloodsport that I could find, but I did find one small snippet saying that the U.S. box office. Go ahead. What do you think the U.S. box office gross for Bloodsport was? Oh, yeah. How about this? I want you to guess the budget for Bloodsport versus the total gross in the United States. Go.
Okay. I'm going to guess the budget for the budget for Bloodsport. I'm going to say was about 13 to 15 million.
And what was the total gross?
And I'm going to say the total gross was about 22, 23 million.
All right. Is that your final answer?
Yeah. Final answer.
Okay. Braxton, lock him in.
Lock him in.
All right. We're almost done, Braxton. He's giving me the look like he's got to go for a walk.
Oh,
give me a few more minutes.
Oh, boy.
No, he's fine. He's fine. Gru, you're a little off here. Bloodsport had a reported budget of $2.3 million and a U.S. box office gross of $11.7 million. Would you want to guess the total worldwide box office gross for Blood?
Well, if it's grossing $11 million in the States and they had a sequel, I would say worldwide total of $45 million.
You're good, my friend. $50 million worldwide,
right.
Making it Cannon Group's most profitable film of 1988. I did have a question here. I just want to say, Gru, in that case, not bad numbers overall for Bloodsport and Juan Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No, especially since Cannon is one that looked more to foreign gross than it did to U.S. A lot of movies that we talk about, that we hear about, they're measured by how they do in the United States. But Cannon, you know, they marketed, they signed all these guys who were popular all over the world, like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Norris, and, you know, these guys have, Bruce Willis, these guys have big overseas draws. So it doesn't surprise me about that.
Gru, what was the critical response to Bloodsport? Rotten Tomatoes, the review aggregate site, website reported a 40% approval rating based on 25 reviews with an average rating of 4.67 out of 10. The site's consensus reads, "This is where it all began for the muscles from Brussels, but beyond Van Damme's athleticism, Bloodsport is a cliched, virtually plotless exercise in an action movie recycling. Metacritic, the film had a weighted average score of 29 out of 100 based on 5 critical reviews, indicating, quote, generally unfavorable reviews. Leonard Claddy of the Los Angeles Times wrote, "Hacking through the jungle of cliché and reservoir of bad acting in Bloodsport are some pretty exciting matches." Mitch Moody of Wine Connoisseur gave it a half star, saying, "Waitress, where's my glass of Chablis?"
Mitch. Love it. Love it. Love it.
I threw that in there. Van Damme was nominated for a Golden Raspberry Award.
That a boy.
For Worst New Star, but lost to Ronald McDonald in Mac and Me.
What?
Andrew Van Gruthius, the proverbial floor is yours. It's the first big spot for Jean-Claude. Let's give you a final review and final thoughts on Bloodsport. How many vials of blood do you give Bloodsport?
I'm going to give Bloodsport 2 vials of blood because it is entertaining to watch, but you know you're watching Claptrap. But I will say that rewatching this after all these years, you can see why Van Damme became the star that he did. He commands the screen. He's in just about every frame of this movie, and he's got it. My guess is they let him keep his accent, but I don't know why they didn't change his origin in the script, because it obviously wasn't written for him. Must have been written for somebody else because he's playing an American. But he's obviously not an American. But he does a great job with what he's given. And, he kicks somebody, you believe it. He kills somebody, you believe it. And, he's this, and I know he goes from here to, Kickboxer and Sudden Death, and he just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and this is a real good launching pad. It's kind of like Above the Law was for Steven Seagal. A lot of Steven Seagal fans like Above the Law. I look at Above the Law as kind of like a B-movie that led to better movies like Under Siege and those. And this is like that. Bloodsport is like the B-movie that leads to the bigger budgets, the better ones, even though there are some that are worse. But I really do enjoy watching it, but I have to give it 2 because I know in my heart it's just not a good movie. So
yeah, let's please stick to Van Damme, please. I don't want to reference Steven Seagal. Thank you.
Oh yeah, they hate each other. I forgot about that.
No, I'm joking.
No,
but
we should talk about that though.
All right, can we move forward with the podcast?
All right, yeah.
Well, we can. I'd like a heads up so I could properly research.
I had forgotten. I'd forgotten. What I know is
we had talked about it last podcast, right? That they almost fought at Stallone's.
That's true.
House.
Okay, yeah, we did. Yeah, that was one of your news items.
Yeah. All right. So you gave it 2 vials of blood. Let me tell you, Gru, what's good about the movie, what's okay. bad about the movie, and then I will give you my final review. What's good about Bloodsport? It's got a great cast. Yes. It really does. I was surprised. And it's, solid acting. I agree with you. You see progression here with Jean-Claude Van Damme. He has a big-time jump from No Retreat to Bloodsport.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you. He commands the screen. He's not, listen, he's not William Hurt, but he shows some acting chops here. He does a good job. I like the fight scenes for the most part. The movie, the fight scenes were pretty good. And I love Bolo Young here. I thought he did a great job in Chong Li. What's bad about this movie, the material is shit. I mean, some of the dialogue, the pacing, it's nonsensical. It is a lot of action movie cliches. I felt like with the message and even the music, it almost wants to be like Rocky III, like this inspirational, yeah. And it just doesn't have the backstory to provide it. There's some real bad overacting in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, the Van Damme where he hits and he's ripped and
in the slow motion.
You know,
the rev up.
Maybe
screams.
When I was, you know, maybe when I was 19, I thought it was cool. But watching it now, I was like, oh my god!
I don't ridiculous. Think we thought it was cool when we were 19.
And you know, I obviously, you know, some of the stuff with the general stereotypes of the movie, it's not a good look. We already talked about that. Not to belabor that point. But I agree with you. I'll give it 2 vials of blood. You know, at first, when I watched it the first time, I was like, this is not a good movie. The second watching, it softened me a little bit. You see, I fall in a different camp than Andrew. You know, I might agree with you that it's a bad movie is enjoyable to watch only in the sense that it marks time. And, you know, in 1989, and you get to see some of the kitschy stuff from canon and what a bad action movie is. I won't call this a bad action movie, but it's not a very, very good action right. movie. But it's definitely an improvement from No Retreat, No Surrender. So I agree with you. I'll stick with it. I'll give it 2 vials of blood.
Okay. So we agree on that.
All right. Well, Gru, that is it for Bloodsport. That is it for this episode of Van Dammit. Gru, for our next Van Dammit podcast,
yeah, what are we
listen
doing?
Attentively, everyone, as Andrew and I will break down 1989's Kickboxer. It's the Van Damme Thai kickboxing revenge actioneer. It's Kurt Sloan versus Tong Po. Gru, Kickboxer.
Very excited about this one. This was the first Van Damme movie, I think. No, I saw No to Retreat, No Surrender in the movies, but I saw Kickboxer in the movies. This one looked good, and I was like, to me, this was like, okay, this is Van Damme. You know, he's gonna go into the stratosphere here. So we'll find out next week, did he or didn't he? But yeah, looking forward to Kickboxer.
Well, not next week, next month.
Next month, yeah.
Come on,
next month. We'll try to get a little sooner than we did this time. You know, we'll try.
Yeah, I'm actually interested because. For me, there's a real gap on some of these movies. Like, literally, the last time I saw these movies was 1989.
Yeah.
And so, I've been honest. I went into this, I would say I'm a fan of Jean-Claude, but I'm not I wasn't a huge fan. And so, I haven't seen some of these movies in quite a while. So, I'm interested to see the progression from Bloodsport to Kickboxer and see where his acting takes us.
Yes. And, you know, I can't wait to see Rosanna Arquette's breasts again in Nowhere to Run. Really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm.
Listen, we could all agree about, in this divided world, we can all agree about Rosanna Arquette's breasts.
Yes.
We could all agree about that.
Yes, thank you.
It's Gru,
great
next
to
week.
Be an American. Oh, go ahead.
Well, next week we will be in our home state of New York. Nothing Worthwhile with Moody and Gru. We're going to call it New York State of Mind. Content to be determined at a later date, but we will be podcasting live from New York. New York State of Mind, Nothing Worthwhile, Moody and Gru reunited back in New York, Merrick, Long Island. Gru, any thoughts?
Very excited. As always, this time of year, we are looking forward to getting back to our home turf. It's been 2 years since we've been there, but we're going to be coming at you with our next Nothing Worthwhile, our New York State of Mind Spectacular, which will air next weekend, Friday or Saturday, or maybe both. Never know how much time we're going to have or how much time we're not going to have, but the 19th and 20th of November, which will be next weekend. And until then, ladies and gentlemen, from Van Dammit, from Nothing Worthwhile, from the last of the Action Heroes podcast, this is Moody and Gru saying,
no retreat
and no surrender.